Welcome back to A Fresh Story, the podcast where we have conversations about brave decisions to start over again. I'm Olivia.
And I'm Jenny. And we're so glad you're here today.
Hello, 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 Sissy. How are you?
I'm doing very well. I just got some new Fresh Starts gear, which is really
fresh
exciting.
Fresh Starts gear.
I'm wearing my new DeLulu shirt. How are you doing today?
DeLulu should be my nickname. I think we're going to start calling.
I mean, I used to call you Lulu, so that does make
right,
a lot
and I
of
am
sense.
DeLulu. Yeah.
I don't know. You are DeLulu, but you're not DeLulu.
I'm a little DeLulu.
You're DeAmbitious.
thank you. Anyway, we had such an awesome guest on. He's a Twitter friend, Adam Marks.
And he's awesome.
He's a mensch. The mensch. He's such a mensch. Yeah. Such a sweetheart.
He's wonderful.
Yeah.
His whole thing is networking and how to network effectively and authentically. His, book I think that's coming out is called The 0-1 Networker. And he is just a good person to network with and a good person to know. So many of these conversations, Olivia and I say this a lot, like we really feel like we get intimate with these people on the podcast and we go deep with them. So it's kind of like we walk out of the podcast recording, we have a new friend. And I definitely feel like that with Adam.
Yeah.
He's an incredibly supportive person too, of like all of our endeavors. And
yeah, he's just a good,
it was a great conversation.
All around salt of the earth, good guy. Mm-hmm. And we're so excited to see what he does in the next couple of years. He has a lot of big things happening. So enjoy this episode with Adam. And please remember to rate, review, and subscribe to A Fresh Story so that we can keep telling fresh start stories. Adam Marks is a networking and branding consultant, speaker, tech founder, startup advisor, journalist, and the founder of the 0-1 Networker. Formerly the founder and CEO of music tech startup Glipple Inc., and as a writer appearing in Crunchbase News, Startup, Grind, Mattermark, and others, Adam draws on more than a decade of experiences in the music and startup tech industries to teach others how to cultivate powerful relationships using strategies of patience, consistency, authenticity, and value creation, which we're all about here at Fresh Starts. As a networking consultant and speaker, Adam has worked with numerous organizations, including Techstars Atlanta, the Atlanta Tech Village, and more, where he advised and mentored founders on how to develop magnetic dialogues and long-term relationships. In addition to advising and consulting, Adam has given talks at ATV, ATDC, and most recently, MC'd the 2022 Society for Human Resource Management State Conference in Burlington, Vermont. So many amazing things you've done, Adam.
As I'm like listening to this opening, the writer in me is like, okay, that sounds clunky. I should move that over there. That has to be re-edited.
I mean, I was stumbling a little, so maybe it was me. But
I should rewrite it.
Well, we connected on Twitter a long time ago, I feel like, and you are one of my favorite Twitter followers. And as we got into kind of the investment stuff and then back out of the investment stuff and into the founder world, you were always such a beam of encouragement and light. So we're super, super excited to chat with you today.
I'm so happy to be here. I'm happy that we're through that like the intro thing, because it's like when you hear your own voice on a podcast,
yeah.
It's like, oh, everyone else sounds great and I sound awful.
Well,
which you think I'd be like used to by now.
It's so uncomfortable hearing like everything you've ever done condensed into like one paragraph, right?
Oh man. It's especially being in like the tech and startup world. Mm-hmm. One of the things that was interesting to me is, having come from a decade and change in the music world into tech and startups, there was that similar vein of, oh, you're 25 and you're so old, you know. It just is like a feeling. It's like in music, it's like, oh, you haven't released like 3 albums already, like why are you messing up here? And it's like, you haven't sold a company for $10 million,
right?
Why are you lazy, you know.
Have you thought about hustling?
Well, it's funny you bring that up, because I've never thought about that before.
No, me either.
You don't walk 14
so
miles in
that.
The morning before you drink Athletic Greens all day.
Oh God! Yeah, what's that thing? I walk 15 miles to school, uphill,
exactly. That's what a tech founder says.
Founder, they're like, I sleep on a pallet on the floor, and then I run 3 miles before I lift, before I even have any
buffalo.
Of my Soylent.
They lift buffalo.
God. Well, you know, this is maybe a good jumping off point. Do you all remember Colin Kroll? You know who Colin Kroll was?
No.
He was the co-founder for Vine.
Okay.
And for HQ Trivia.
Okay.
A few years ago, it was like 2018, he passed away really very suddenly. I didn't know him personally. I just knew, you know.
Yeah, in the tech world.
Mm-hmm. And I don't remember what exactly the cause was, and I'm not looking to defame, but I remember that it sent shockwaves through the tech world. I mean, as well it should. And my feeling was very much akin to the feeling that I was running from in the music world, which is, oh man, not another one. This is enough with this. And that was a big thing that I was running from. Because as much as I love the music world and the art world, and you know that I think tech has gotten better, but at the time, I don't think we talked enough about mental health and like, I'm very, very pro talking about mental health, and it's improved, but there's still that like hustle grind, that, you know, that whole shtick. And it's not romantic to burn out really, really young. It's just sad.
Yeah.
Coming from seeing people, being in the world where people do all kinds of drugs and like, I'm not somebody's parent, but like, it's to see that kind of like hustle, code until you can't sleep, code until you can't see straight. Like, that's not cool.
No, it's not.
So I'm glad to see that it has gotten better, but I'd like to see a lot more conversation around like, hey, look, you know, turning around and being honest with like your investors or your team members and saying, I'm having an off day because like I have anxiety or I have depression or I have PTSD or whatever it is.
Yeah.
It doesn't make you broken. It makes you human.
Yeah.
And so that was a really kind of intense note to start on.
I have so many questions. I'm excited to dig in. I'm excited.
Yeah. I mean, let's segue right into it. Let's take us back to the beginning of your Fresh Start story.
Oh boy. What a short question with a long answer. I think the best place to start would be getting into the music world, because I didn't study music. I have degrees in history and medieval history.
Where did you grow up, Adam?
I grew up here in Atlanta.
Okay.
But my parents are from New York.
No one's ever
accused me of being like, oh, you're very Southern. No, my dad's from Brooklyn. Like,
you have very New York energy. Yeah.
I went to school in Boston, so it didn't help. My political platform is I prefer Dunkin' Donuts and Pepsi. So I'm never going to be elected to local office in
local
Atlanta.
Local office Atlanta. Yeah, that's so funny. I never thought of that.
No, so I grew up here, and I always look for the right time to share. The world in which I grew up is I effectively grew up in the Me Too movement, what we now call the Me Too movement, because my parents do employment discrimination, sex harassment, whistleblower kind of law. And my dad started his legal career at the Human Rights Division in New York, and so I grew up in a world that the only way I understand the universe is through equality,
justice.
Egalitarianism. Yeah. So you see that, and we've now gotten to the point, especially in tech, where I'm glad to see that there's much more dialogue around like, hey, we should have women on our board and representation of people who look different than us. And it unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, depending on the way we talk about the conversation, you see some people who have come out of the woodwork, and I won't name names, but they kind of will pin it on the lapel as like, oh, I'm an ally. I'm an ally. Yeah. It's like, look, being an ally, it's put up or shut up. if someone wants to think of me that way, that's great. And I'll accept it humbly. But like, it's not something you wear on your shirt and say, oh, okay, I'm an ally today because it's chic.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
it's so interesting though. I have so many questions for you.
I have so many answers.
Okay. Jenny, so I have two sons. They're 6 and 9. Mm-hmm. And Jenny and I were just talking about this the other day, is that I'm such a feminist. My sons are being raised. The only world they know, right, mm-hmm. is this egalitarian feminist single mom life, right? So how did that impact you to be raised in a household like that, like as a man growing up?
And your parents are both lawyers, is that right?
They're partners, yes.
And they're the same birthday.
And they have the same birthday.
I want to know everything.
Do you have
about
siblings?
Them.
Yes, my sister does paralegal work with them, at least right now. And my brother will be finishing his master's in film.
Okay.
Wow. He's actually in LA right now. He's at Boston University, but there's a program out in LA. Okay. So
did you go to BU too?
No, I went to Brandeis actually.
Brandeis. Okay.
So we both have a love of Boston.
Yeah.
You can hear the rounded O in the pronunciation. No, it was an interesting childhood. I think one of the things that certainly we don't talk enough about, you know, growing up in the late 90s, early 2000s, there was many of my friends were girls, mm-hmm. you know, and I love the fact that we've gotten to a point in society where like we can have discussions about acceptance for lots of different types of women, mm-hmm. you know, in terms of like, are you a woman who likes makeup or mm-hmm. a woman who likes skateboard? Mm-hmm. Like to me, it's just like, do what makes you happy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I wish that there was similar progress in the conversation about identifying masculinity. You know, we talk a lot about toxic masculinity, but there are lots of ways to identify with one's masculinity that are non-toxic, mm-hmm. and it doesn't negate the discussion around toxicity, but understanding how to identify with oneself and how to just express oneself in a way that is, I identify as male, but what is non-toxic masculinity is, hey, I'm about saying, why is everyone here male in the room or on the board or in the meeting? Like, 50%, probably more, of the population isn't male. So why do they all look like me?
Right.
You know?
I mean, I think it's a really, this is a point, something that we talk about a lot. Olivia and I have a younger brother, mm-hmm. and he is very much his own person. And he, you know, both him and my dad, our dad's really into poetry and plays and stuff like that. And like, you know, we've talked about this where people hear about our brother, he's into wine and poetry and stuff like that. And people make assumptions. And it's always so funny to me because it's never been a question of his sexuality or anything like that. He's lives with this wonderful female partner. And but there's such a regressive definition of what being a man is. And I always say, like, it's funny to me when men are like, well, I'm not a feminist. I'm like, don't you understand that feminism is liberation for us all? Like, feminism is liberation for everyone. Feminism means, like, it literally kills men that they don't cry because their hearts, right? It literally gives them heart attacks. Like, if men are raised in a world where they are not allowed to cry, it brings them to death earlier. Why do we want that for them? I don't want that for them. I love men. I want them to be able to cry and express emotion and like Broadway shows. And that has nothing to do with anything else other than liking Broadway shows, right?
I spend so much, I don't mean to cut you off.
No.
I spend so much time thinking about that because growing up in the late 90s and it jars me now. Like, I love old sitcoms. If you look at my Twitter feed, it's like sitcom references. Like, mm-hmm. I love sitcoms, but there are some where it's like, it's really hard for me to watch old sitcoms that use the term gay as a derogatory insult when it's like, oh, okay, it's just not an insult anymore. Hey, the sky's blue. That's not an insult.
Right.
And so, like, I grew up in very much in that kind of a struggle I love a ball game as much as the next person, but it's just not the defining characteristic of my personality. I write poetry all the time. I love reading poetry. Now I have a much more broad appreciation of classical music through heavy metal, because it's based on classical music. Mm-hmm. You know, I love that kind of what we call sensitive. It's just, but I don't see why we have to label it, right?
Like, why are we like,
what I enjoy doing?
You know, when you do line breaks, that's kind of feminine. Like, suddenly poetry is feminine because there's a lot of, like, it makes no sense.
Well, here's what always baffled me, especially being in the music world, right? Mm-hmm. If a guy expresses an interest in singing, mm-hmm. okay, it's considered feminine. And I'm using overgeneralization in high school, right? I'm not putting words in someone's mouth. But then there's like some massive chasm. And guys who are the singer in a band, it's like, okay, macho masculine.
That's straight.
And that's interesting to me. You know, I'm super jealous. One of my closest best friends just went and saw Bikini Kill on their reunion tour. And I love Riot Girl Punk because you look at someone like Kathleen Hanna, who's the singer for Bikini Kill, and you look at the messaging. And if you dig into this like third wave feminism kind of punk music, and then you read about it and you realize, wow, gee, you know, Kurt Cobain from Nirvana, the biggest band in the world at the time, was a massive Bikini Kill fan, massive Riot Girl fan.
And really played with his presence in the world and the way that he showed up, right? I mean, he wore dresses and stuff like that.
I love it. You can get on YouTube. One of the most interesting videos that someone caught. He was doing like an acoustic performance, and apparently there was some person, probably a guy, groping a woman. I mean, you can't see it, but you can see what he's mouthing, and he throws his guitar down and. You can see the like hand motions of not at my show, man, you know, and to, you know, stopping a performance like not at this. We're not doing this shit.
No.
You know?
Yeah.
And so without going too far into that, that's.
I mean, I could talk about Kurt Cobain Nirvana for a very long time.
Adam could come back. I need to talk about Adam today. We'll talk about Kurt Cobain another day.
Another day. So that's the world I grew up in was that egalitarian.
Yeah.
Mindset and understanding, and that is a real function of now what I do is, you know, networking, consulting, building. When I say networking, I'm not talking about tech kind of. I'm not the person building your website thing. But how to teach people how to gain access to the people or organizations they want to gain access to, and do it in a way that's not sales and marketing, and that may sound somewhat dismissive of sales and marketing. It's not meant to. Sales and marketing is inherently transactional. And it needs to be, because we need to have money coming in the door. But the best salespeople understand that there's a time to turn it off. And when you turn it off and you can express interest in who someone is or what their mission is, your mission isn't what you're selling. It's what do you care about? That lowers the barriers and creates all kinds of opportunities for business, for sales, for collaboration.
That's where the magic is.
Absolutely. And you'd be staggered at who you can have conversations with.
I am the queen of that. That's my obsession. So, Adam, did you like school growing up?
Yeah, I generally enjoyed school. Math was always tough for me. Although now as I think back, you know, I try to look at things through a more balanced perspective and say, instead of saying, oh, I hated this, it's maybe I just didn't connect to the way in which it was presented or taught.
Yeah. So, and then talk to us about the music. So where did the music come in? Because you've had a music career, no?
Yeah, I did the band thing for like a hot minute in high school. Remember when I was going to be a rock star? and after I went through some stuff late high school, and I wasn't sure where I wanted to go to school. So I took a gap year at a time, 2009, not to mention the recession, but it was a time gap years weren't considered really chic in the way that I think they've become chic. And I got a lot of flack for it in certain parts of my community.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just necessary to take a step back and say, okay, what do I care about? Where do I want to go? Right. What kind of community do I want? And it was during that time that I fell into doing music journalism. It wasn't mm-hmm. going to be a career. And it was where I learned how to build relationships.
Right.
And that spiraled into college radio, which spiraled into a startup. I mean, it was what I did outside of class, you know, cause you know, I studied history and medieval history. Like,
yeah, you know, it's you're our brother's age and he also studied medieval history and I think art. So there's something there.
And art history. Yeah. My minor is in art history. And so I'm that person that went into, like, I needed to get an art credit. And so I took a modern art class. I was like, oh, this is easy. Yeah. Why don't we just do this?
Yeah. I understand that.
But you know what's so interesting though, Adam, is that I too was a classical studies. I majored in Latin and classics my entire life and majored in it. And I still go back as a networker and Yenta and all the things I do now to those messages mm-hmm. from studying classics, right? And so, you know, people are people. And any good, you know, networker kind of understands that, like, people haven't changed over millennia, right? So mm-hmm. I would love to learn a little, I would love to hear your take on kind of the relationship between the history you studied and the work that you do now.
Well, it's interesting because it's been a mental journey for me to understand and appreciate how studying history, which I took because I enjoy history, affects or benefits what I do now. I mean, the very first thing that I will acknowledge is I think it made me a really very good writer. I mean, I grew up in a family of writers, but learning how to synthesize
mm-hmm.
lots of information to create a cogent argument, I think is beneficial to most anybody in any sort of business environment. Say any, but most, say most. Yeah. And I wrote an essay a few years ago just for fun, and it was called How to Write Like an Editor. And it's just a straight breakdown of like things to do and also things to get away from. Like the concept of the 5-paragraph essay is it's a teaching tool.
Yeah,
it's not a straight, like you have to do this.
Right.
So thinking about history from a perspective of what could have happened as opposed to this is what was always going to happen helps me understand like that they're always moving portions. So when we're studying, you know, the Civil War in the 1860s in the US, there's still stuff going on in Europe and in Asia and in South America. Like there's other stuff going on. And so when I advise founders, I advise companies, do consulting or whoever will listen, I say, look, you know, there's a zillion and one really good reasons why someone hasn't gotten back to your email. And and none of them have anything to do with you.
Yeah. Right.
So understanding how to perceive other people's reality, maybe they have kids, maybe someone's sick, they got to get the car fixed. Like they're running a company, not to take it so personally. You can divert that obsessive very human emotion and focus and divert it to something more positive, right? As opposed to sitting by the phone, so to speak, and saying, why haven't they gotten back to my email?
Yeah, right.
Which we could dig into later, but.
Right. Right. It's so interesting. So what was the journey? So you did music journalism.
Mm-hmm.
And did you play music? You said you were in a band.
You were in a band.
School.
What? Yeah.
Oh gosh, not well. I like to say I posed with a guitar.
Okay.
I was never going to be a virtuoso, but I was always a writer. I wrote most of the lyrics. I often think that spending time practicing singing actually helped breathing techniques. So I think it helps me in speaking, you know, situations. But I think that. So after the journalism thing just kind of morphed into when I left school and I had a music startup. I mean, I could quite possibly be one of three or four people on this planet who's actually read all the music licenses, which is as exciting as it sounds.
What's a music startup? What does that mean?
Well, so the startup that I put together was maybe a little bit ahead of its time and behind the curve in some context.
That's a good inflection
but
point.
My context, my thought process was, look, I love independent music. And independent can mean everybody from the singer-songwriter in the garage in Chicago to Pearl Jam. I mean, it's a very wide net. And I was convinced that there was going to be an explosion of appreciation for independent music, which in fact there was. I loved having investors tell me nobody cares, nobody wants it. That was fun. But I put together a platform with some co-founders, of which my sister was one. And the premise was, we're going to create a platform for independent focused material. We're going to give it away for free. It's going to be zero royalties. And there were other benefits to it. And every time I pitched artists, I mean, my yes rate was 87%. With those, it's going to be free. We're not paying you. We're not paying royalties. There were other benefits that they saw. I wrote the license. I synthesized numerous licenses. So that's where that synthesis comes in. And there were many conversations where the pitch wasn't a 30-second pitch. It was like a 35-minute conversation with people with whom I had developed relationships with, and who could ask questions. I highlighted parts of the licenses. I said, this is where people usually have questions. I wrote everything in here. I can answer every question you have in relation to this document. And, you know, that was an instructive step in understanding how a community that is so used to being taken advantage of will respond to something that like seems too good to be true. Oftentimes it is too good to be true. But when you approach people from an authentic perspective, authentic angle, they don't feel often as targeted. Right. And so you leave yourself open to say, hey, okay, this wasn't working. We fixed it, or we improved it, or we noticed that this was gaining more traction and seemed a more beneficial, you know, aspect.
So people could come to the platform and search for new artists. Is that the premise?
Yeah. And there were other, I mean, without getting too muddled in the details, there were other benefits that were kind of interesting that may have been, you know, it was during the Spotify SoundCloud growth cycle. So, you know, there's only so much oxygen in the environment.
You were young. You were a young guy doing this.
I feel so old, but yeah. I like to think of myself as classic.
And I like that you are not a lawyer, but you think like a lawyer.
In my house, it's necessary. I just want you to just imagine what dinner time is like. there's never one right answer. If you think there's only one right answer, your argument's not good enough.
I don't know what your parents' names are, but I like to imagine they have the same name, like Sandy and Sandy or Alex.
Oh,
and
God,
Alex.
No. Robert and Jeannie. Oh, my gosh. Robert and Jeannie. That would be great, actually.
In my mind, they're Sandy and Sandy, okay? So we're just going to stick with that.
Where did your parents meet?
Oh, in New York somewhere. Okay. I don't know.
I'm fascinated by the whole
thing. They're kind of a bizarre but wonderful couple of people. I think I'm biased, but
listen,
I'm really...
if you think your parents are wonderful, it means you've been pushed by as far in the other direction. I think a lot of us are biased the other way about our parents.
Well, you know, I think that I think that when we talk about parents, everyone's got their very personal experiences. I will say that one of the things that was really very beneficial for me, growing up in the 90s, it was really beneficial for me to see my mom working, which isn't, you know, I that's not a all moms need to work.
Like, for you, that's
but
what
it was very beneficial for me to see an example of, particularly growing up in Atlanta, an example of, hey, we can do everything that men can do. Mm-hmm. If that's a decision that we make for ourselves. And seeing, you know, my mom do those things, and the way that my dad treated, you know, my dad's a perfect example of, like, visually, quote, quote, the enemy, right? Because he's a 70-something white boomer, you know, male.
Right.
But my dad's, like I said, started, I mean, before he was doing pregnancy discrimination, before it was covered federally, you know, in New York State. And like doing trans discrimination, we would now call it trans discrimination in New York State. And so things like that really and cogently shaped how I see the world.
Yeah.
And I think that it's necessary also, you know, because part of what I spend a lot of time talking to students, founders, corporate teams about is there's a misunderstanding that you should agree with everyone in your network. Everyone should be moving in the single direction. But if you agree with everyone in your network, you don't have a network. You have an echo chamber.
Mm.
So I float between lots of different communities. And there are some people with whom I agree on A, but not on B.
Right.
You know, and that's okay. But in the world we live in, you have to learn to sit down at the table next to someone. You're not going to agree 100% with all your coworkers. No, it's not going to happen. You can't just write people off and say, okay, no.
No.
I mean, there's obviously a line.
Right. But there's a values and a, right, like, that you have to align with beyond that.
And part of that value is to understand, like, okay, maybe this person thinks this way.
Mm-hmm.
Or has that experience. And I don't necessarily agree with, you know, I hesitate to use politics, but it's a good example. They voted for person A and I voted for person B. Yeah. It's like, well, okay. But, like, at some point you need to get something done. And
yeah.
You can't just have this mentality of writing people off when they don't agree with you. That's childish.
Yeah. So it's true. So how did you enter the kind of the world you're in now, work-wise?
Well, so when I was in building the music startup, I mean, I knew zero people in tech. I mean, to fully illustrate how zero people I knew, I didn't know where the computer science building was on the campus. I think I took Java for like 40 minutes and dropped it. My mentality, I think, at the time was, okay, I'm building this thing. I'm building it in Atlanta, not in San Francisco. I want to have a network so that when I launch something, I'll have a group of people to launch it to.
Yeah.
To whom to launch it.
You know, it's funny that you say that, Adam, because I tell people all the time that when you want to launch something, you actually have to have a network you built like 10 years before that.
Oh, all the time. So I've done advising at you know, with the Tech Village and with mentoring with a number of organizations. And the first thing, whenever a founder inevitably asks, and I understand the question, we're launching in 2 weeks. When should we start networking?
Yeah.
Bro, it's like 9 months ago.
Yeah.
But next best answer is today. But you also have to modulate your expectations and recognize 10 months, not 2 weeks. 10 months to cultivate a really good, positive, mutually beneficial conversation, not, hey, we're launching, we want something, we want something, we want something.
Yeah.
When you go at it in an organic way, it's slow and it doesn't gel very much with the hustle, you know, out the door mentality.
Yep.
The flip side of that is you gain access that is insane.
Mm-hmm.
And I find myself in situations where, like, people now recognize me and I don't know who they are. And I don't mean that in a mean way. I mean, just like, they may have seen my content and I tend to be pretty good with faces, but there are people who, like, and it's a bizarre feeling.
Yeah.
And you gain access to lots of different people when you don't come at it from a transactional perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. So you were building the tech platform and then you.
Yeah. So I was building it. And at the time I was I was tweeting an enormous amount about the music industry and stuff, and someone who to me was an influential tech journalist, who's now a good friend of mine, just slid into my DMs one day and said, "Hey, you have opinions, and you know something about music." And I'm like, "Yeah, I definitely have opinions." he said, "Would you like to write like a one-off piece for this?" And it wasn't like a job offer, you know, for a long-term thing. It was just a, "Yeah, that sounds like fun."
Yeah.
And so suddenly I was doing music tech journalism. Okay, now I've done a few pieces, you know, maybe a piece on SoundCloud, maybe a piece on Spotify. Like, so when I closed my first company, and this, I'm glad we kind of came back to this, you know, about mental health, because when I closed my first company, I didn't know who I was. You know, yeah. I'd been the music person, the music guy for like a decade at that point. And it was really, it was at a time when we couldn't really talk about, you know, mental health that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I spent some time kind of just, I did some writing, I did some editing. I knew I liked talking to people. I knew I liked collaborating on different projects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I didn't really know how that, how to make that work.
Right.
And someone said to me at some point, "Oh, your branding with orange sunglasses, it's so on point. Your personal brand is amazing." These orange sunglasses are so, this company isn't even around anymore. I think they got bought up like 10 years ago almost. And I was just late. It's just a perfect example of like an accidental brand.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
there have been, I've been in conversations with people numerous times who've been like, "Oh, I know you, right, from Twitter, right, or LinkedIn with orange sunglasses." I mean, it's...
I love that.
And so I kind of tried my hand at the personal branding thing. This was right around COVID. Mm. I did some work with Techstars Atlanta. They were I was pulled into an event, into working on a team by a close friend of mine who basically said, "Hey, we need some help with this. I talked to Techstars. They'd love to have you." And it was just kind of a things yeah. like that snowball. This yeah. is someone who I met at an event through a Twitter chat.
Yep.
Yeah. It was after, I'd say the last year and a half, I've spent time really focusing on the networking component, because the personal branding thing is fun, but I don't do logo design. I don't do web design.
Yeah.
I am not the person you come to if you want to 30x your follower count.
Right.
Because it's ultimately, I mean, I've gone viral on LinkedIn. It's fun, but it doesn't really mean anything.
No.
I'm the person you come to when you want to learn, how do I get in front of anyone in a way where they want to pick up my phone call or answer my email? So that is a very long
roundabout. And that really, no, and I love that, but that, and talking to you, you're obviously very smart. I mean,
I'm going to tell my mom.
Yeah, tell your mom. She did a great job. But, you know.
Sandy. Your mom, Sandy.
Oh, my God.
About networking is so innate for people that really understand networking, right? So it's like, people ask me this a lot of the time too. How did you get this person on the podcast, or how did you get your book to this person? And I'm like, it's just who I am, right? It's just, I've cultivated these relationships from years and years and years of working with these people and providing support for these people, right? So much of what I feel for you and what I can see in you is that this isn't just like a job. This is something that you genuinely feel and can help people with because of who you are and what you understand about networking.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what I try to bring. I was giving a talk at Georgia State University about a month or so ago, a couple months now, and the group of students, and one of the students asked, she said, "You know, I've heard from one of our professors or something, the point of networking is to sell yourself. And what's your thoughts on that?" And I was like, "Well, you know, I don't necessarily think your professor is wrong, but I would frame it differently. I think the point of networking is to make yourself so magnetic that people want to be in your orbit."
Yeah.
And when you do that, you don't really have to sell yourself in the same kind of transactional business pitch kind of way.
Yeah.
And so I find myself having conversations, and so I guess we'll talk about it at the end of the podcast. Low-key, I've been writing a book, which I'm trying to pare down because there's just so much, but a portion of this book, which is, it started out as like a book on networking, which is still what it's aimed at, but there's a large portion that's aimed at helping people who don't identify as networkers understand that they can do this, right? Yeah, and so there's a huge portion. One of the main things I hear from founders, particularly in a in a coaching or in an advisor capacity, is I'm really introverted. I don't feel comfortable doing this. And I will never call someone an introvert. If you identify that way, that's cool. I think people are multidimensional. Mm-hmm. I am not the person at the networking event, quote, who's like Johnny High School, center of attention. Like, this is not comfortable for me. I'm the person that's like by the bar or with a coffee or whatever. And I think that in society, we're kind of conditioned to say like, okay, this personality, that's a great networker. Yeah. And you don't fit that box, so you're not going to be one. Or you have to be that in order to be a good networker. And so I spent a lot of time thinking about who has typically trouble with networking, and are they unreachable? And there's only like two kinds of people who are like fundamentally unreachable. People who are arrogant. Mm-hmm. I don't really know how to help that person. If you feel that there's nothing left to learn. Mm-hmm. And people who genuinely don't like people. Mm-hmm. Aside from those two extreme examples, maybe you're quiet, maybe you find it a little intimidating, maybe you're starting a new career or you want to be in a new industry.
Right.
There are ways, it's okay. It's like going to the gym. You don't suddenly say, I'm going to get healthy and drop 40 pounds before so I can fit into that wedding dress. Yeah. You say, I need to create small habits so that they have outsized effects. So if you want to get healthier, you work out, exercise, drink water, decrease your alcohol or your soda intake, work on your mental health, sleep better. These are all relatively little things.
Right.
They have huge outsized effects.
Right.
And the same is true with networking. You go out and you have little conversations. You don't try to get that sale done in the first 30 seconds.
Yeah. I love that. I love that so much. I think that is such a necessary book, and so much of what you're really doing is helping people see that they're worthy.
I'm big on self-worth. This is a conversation I have with my therapist probably every session, is concepts of self-worth and concepts of not just self-worth, but worth in what you're attracted to as a mission, as a goal, right? Mm-hmm. Because understanding worth also impacts what I call the belief mindset, understanding who you can talk to. There are so many people who are incredibly reachable and you never know who somebody knows.
Yeah.
What kind of business can come out of that? I mean, you find yourself in situations.
Oh yeah.
In my part of my book is like finding myself 40 floors above Atlanta in a penthouse, after party kind of deal going, what am I doing here? All these people were just up on stage.
Yeah.
And I don't belong here, but don't tell anyone that. And those kinds of situations can happen for lots of people, but you have to prep the ground and prep the reputation of, this is someone people want to know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love that. I think that is such a necessary book, and we're excited to support you in that when it comes out. So, Adam, if somebody is going through a fresh start, what would be some wise words that you could impart to them?
I would say that everyone's learning. Okay. Mm-hmm. There is no one who has the answer, especially... I won't say especially, but in my experience, being in the startup and tech world, no one does anything by themselves. And I think that includes people who are solo founders. Like, you still aren't building it yourself. You have great employees or a great customer base or great advisors or investors. Like, reach out and talk to people, and it's okay to be vulnerable, because it's like, don't suffer in silence. I have anxiety. I live with depression sometimes. And so I'm very pro mental health and talking to, reaching out to people and saying, look, if you have these things or whatever you might have, you're not broken. You're going through something and that's okay.
Yeah.
It can feel daunting, doesn't even cover it, crushing if it's just you and you're just kind of swallowing it.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. I'm not a trained therapist, but that's what I would say.
Not yet. I love that. you got therapist vibes, my friend. And last question, the hardest question of all, what was the last thing that you ate and truly loved?
Oh, such a hard question.
I know. We got to compile all these into like one podcast.
Oh episode. Man, yeah, that's seriously. Such a hard question. Well, I had some pretty good Persian food last night. That was pretty good. It's really hard for me to follow this because we just had Passover. So it's like anything with bread or carbs, I'm like, yes, I'll eat that and I'll eat that and I'll eat that.
That's fair.
Probably that, or I had Mediterranean chicken.
How did you manage to grow up where you did and not have any accent whatsoever? Is that because your parents?
Yeah, because people thought that I went to all my friends in Boston, who, you know, a lot of them from New York, New Jersey. When I went to college, were very disappointed I didn't have a Southern accent. the only thing really Southern about me is occasionally I'll drink sweet tea.
We all love sweet tea.
No accent for me.
Well, Adam, it's such a pleasure chatting with you. You're always more than welcome to come hang and talk, especially about, you know, when your book comes out, about, you know, networking. Yeah. And I would love to really dig into it too. You know, would love to have you back to talk about the power of networking during a fresh start.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. Because it can feel so isolating when you're going through a fresh start. It just feels so alone. And that's obviously the personal networking aspect, but oftentimes professional networking. But, you know, talking about kind of like how to develop those skills during those inflection points in your life, I think would be a really, really important conversation to have.
Yeah, I'd love to have that. There's a whole like section two of my book is all about what happens when you can't go back to that network that's basically been your network. Sometimes people get laid off or get fired or just like stuff happens. COVID happened. It wasn't because people were bad at their jobs. It just shit happens. And sometimes you are forced into a fresh start.
Yeah.
So how do you do that from scratch without being like, you got to put food on the table, but you also want to cultivate relationships. Like, how do you navigate that?
I love that.
So we can have that conversation kind of in a more targeted way.
And you could also come back and we can talk about music more.
Oh, that's, I would love to do that, but we'll be here forever.
I know. I have to figure out some sort of topic to bring people in to talk about music because I always want to whenever we have musicians on, but we just don't have the time.
I'll tell you a quick funny story. There was when I was in the music world, I did an interview because I used to do like, you know, YouTube interviews and with this woman out in LA, and we had a great chat and we kind of knew each other. Years later, after I had closed my music stuff and was moving into the tech stuff, I ran into her on Twitter through somebody in tech. Everybody knows everybody. It was like worlds
everybody
colliding.
Everybody knows everybody. Everybody does know everybody. It is an extremely small world. And I think people don't realize that.
Crazy.
No, I love that. You have such an old soul. Do people tell you that all the time?
Okay. all the time. I've been 40 since I was 12.
I was going to say, I could see you in any time period. You're like, you could be in the 20s, the 40s, the 50s, the 60s.
Fantastic.
Like, yeah. Maybe you've just been around a long time.
Yeah.
No, I love it. Adam, thank you for being here and for sharing everything. We're super excited to have you back and we appreciate you. And we're so excited, you know, about what you're doing and for your book and everything. So thanks for being here and chatting.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this so much. I hope that your listeners got something positive out of it. I know we didn't share like a whole lot of like how to do this kind of
That's
stuff,
right.
But we can do that on the next.
Yeah,
next one.
100%. But,
Thank you for listening to today's story. We're always here and we're proud of you.
A Fresh Story is produced by Fresh Starts Registry, the first and only platform for everything you need to begin again. You can read the show notes and learn more about today's episode at afreshstory.com.
As always, we want to remind our listeners that while we strive to provide accurate and helpful information, we are not medical doctors or mental health professionals. We want to remind you all that the information shared in this podcast is not a substitute for professional advice. We highly recommend consulting a qualified healthcare or mental health professional for any concerns or questions you may have. Remember, we are a podcast, but we are not licensed medical professionals. Always consult with your healthcare provider for any medical decisions. And as a gentle reminder, all opinions are our guests and do not necessarily reflect our own.